KALW.
From KALW News in San Francisco, this is Cross Currents. Context, culture, and connection from around the Bay Area.
I live in Patterson, California.
I live in Richmond.
I live in Daly City, top of the hill, Daly City.
Noe Valley.
San Francisco, Outer Mission.
I live in San Pablo, California.
Coming up, we're heading to the California border, where state agents patrol for pests that could wipe out the state's agriculture.
How you doing, ma'am? Are you carrying any plants or produce?
No.
Okay, have a good day.
And we'll hear why some scientists want us to rethink this idea of invasive insects.
The insect is just an insect. It didn't introduce itself. It certainly didn't organize an invasion.
Also, from our program at Solano State Prison, the story of an inmate who picked up an unexpected hobby.
I started sewing because I didn't have the money to keep paying $3 for a pair of shorts.
Cross Currents is coming up. Pests. Caterpillars, aphids, beetles, they're insects that, if we let them, will eat our food before we do. When California farmers ship almond and citrus to markets around the world, and grocery stores here import strawberries and blueberries for us to eat in the wintertime, there's actually a whole system working to make sure insects aren't moving with the produce. Bugs that could wipe out our citrus orchards or strawberry fields. Today, we're launching a three-part series all about pests, the crazy lengths that we go to as a country and as a state to keep insects from spreading and destroying our crops. We're calling this series Operation Pest Patrol. Now, if you're insect phobic, don't worry. The story of pests actually has a lot to do with people, like helicopters spraying chemicals over downtown LA, the origins of the cherry trees in Washington, D.C. We'll even show how pests are connected to the nation's debate over immigration. We'll get to all that in the series. But today, KALW science reporter Marissa Ortega-Welch begins our exploration of pests by taking us on a boat ride with the U.S. Customs and Border Protection.
Every ship that comes into the U.S. gets a visit from Customs and Border Protection, sometimes before the ship has even come into dock. I'm with a handful of Customs and Border Protection officers. We're visiting a giant bulker anchored in the middle of the San Francisco Bay. We have to take a water taxi out to meet it and then climb from the little boat onto a staircase up the side of the ship that's about two stories tall. But calling it a staircase is actually generous. It really feels more like a ladder because it sways as I climb. The hand railing is covered by netting, which is apparently there to save me from falling into the bay if I slip. But I make it.
Woo! Good morning, ma'am. Welcome aboard.
On board, the crew greets us. It's mostly very polite young men from the Philippines. This ship left China a month ago. It stopped in Russia for fuel and then crossed the Pacific Ocean to San Francisco. It's heading to Pittsburgh, where it will pick up petroleum products from the refinery there.
Attention, all crew, attention, all crew. Please proceed to the ship's office.
Two of the Customs and Border Protection officers check the entire crew's passports and visas.
So we need everybody muster in the hallway with their passports in their hand.
Okay. This is typical customs work, right? Except they're sort of bringing the border to the crew. If a crew member doesn't have a valid visa, they'll have to stay on the ship while it's docked in the U.S. But the Border Protection officer I'm tagging along with is an agricultural specialist.
Good morning, Captain. We're doing the agriculture side of your chef exam.
This is Derek Dumo. Customs and Border Protection's mission is to protect America's borders from threats. And those threats can include insects, invasive insects from foreign countries that might make their way into the U.S. and destroy our agricultural crops and, by extension, our economy.
We're going to follow the chief cook of the ship to go down and check their provisions to see if there's any pests that we can see.
Every week, Dumo inspects entire ships like this one, from the pantry to the deck, for insects from other countries that might be hitching a ride. Customs and Border Protection must inspect every ship entering the U.S. for insects, which kind depends on where the ship has been and when. The ship's cook leads us down into the kitchen. It smells like spices and cigarettes.
Let's check your dry stores first.
And into the ship's walk-in pantry, with shelves of bulk-sized boxes of cornflakes and bottles of ketchup. Dumo scans his flashlight over the stacks of food.
And then all I'm doing is just checking like any of the nooks and crannies, the crevices, the linings of the bags, to see if there's anything kind of crawling around here.
I'm picturing cockroaches, but Dumo says that the insect he's looking for is something called a capra beetle from India. This is no ladybug. The Department of Agriculture calls this tiny, hairy brown insect one of the world's most destructive pests of grain product. If let loose in a grain storage, it would take a bite of each little piece of grain and could end up destroying the whole batch. Luckily, we don't find any. So we go check the freezer.
And the vegetable room.
Vegetables and fruit.
The walk-in fridge with cardboard boxes full of produce.
So everything's coming from Russia, is that correct?
Yes.
Okay.
The fear here is the Mediterranean fruit fly. It's native to Africa, but it's already spread to most other continents. The Department of Ag calls this the most important pest in the world. Its larvae can infest apples, avocados, cherries, lemons, peaches, basically all the fruit we grow and eat in California. If the cook had purchased the ship's vegetables in China, a big source of these fruit flies, Dumo would have to seal the fridge shut. The ship's crew wouldn't be allowed to touch the vegetables until they were back out on international waters.
That's good to me. All right, let's go back up.
Then we go back upstairs and outside to the deck of the ship, where now Dumo starts the part of his job that I find the most mind-boggling, which is to scan this cruise-sized ship for the eggs of an insect called the Asian gypsy moth.
It's kind of like this beige or tan-colored fuzzy, kind of like almost like the size of a flat half dollar.
That little half dollar can contain hundreds of eggs. Eggs that could hatch into caterpillars, then turn into moths. The adult moths can fly up to 20 miles, so they could fly to land, lay their own eggs, which will produce more caterpillars. A big enough infestation of Asian gypsy moth caterpillars can eat all the leaves off a tree. So even just one little egg mass on this ship could lead to the destruction of California's native forests or our commercial apple industry. This ship was docked in eastern Russia in July, which happens to be egg-laying season for the moth. And what do moths love? Light. When crew members load up these ships, they often work around the clock, and the ship is lit up like a movie set.
That Asian gypsy moth is, of course, going to get attracted to that area, hang around, and then maybe even consider, hey, I'm going to start laying my eggs in this area, too.
Dumo starts his inspection at one end of the ship and slowly works his way to the other. He scans the deck, the walls. He slides out a mirror on the end of a retractable pole to see underneath things.
And then we also like to check like areas where there's lights and the areas around it, because of course it's a moth. It will always be attracted to lighted areas too.
Dumo climbs a ladder to peer into the bulk hold. This particular ship is called a bulker. Instead of being stacked with containers like some of the cargo ships you see, it has big empty holds in the center of the ship, like giant dumpsters 6 stories deep that can be filled with bulk goods, everything from grain to petroleum products.
There's nothing.
Dumo tells me one time his coworker found a beehive on the inside of a hold. Local pest control had to remove that. But most of the pests he finds are not that obvious. Remember, he's looking for an egg mass the size of a half dollar, and this is a cruise-sized ship. But unlike a cruise ship, it's not pristinely clean and painted white everywhere. The walls and decks have spots of rust and peeling paint, and there's a lot of equipment. Plenty of places for an insect to camouflage or hide. Suddenly, Dumo bends down to look at something. What'd you find?
Just a piece of paper. Piece of brown paper.
Dumo and his mirror and flashlight are all that stands between California's forests and agriculture and these invasive insects that could wipe them out. It all seems so needle in a haystack to me. Like, really, this is how we keep out insects that we don't want? We think that by inspecting these giant cargo ships, we're going to catch one tiny little egg mass and keep it from spreading? How effective are these invasive insect policies? It turns out some scientists say we shouldn't even be classifying insects as invasive.
The insect is just an insect. It didn't introduce itself. It certainly didn't organize an invasion.
This is Dr. Matthew Chu of Arizona State University. I called him after I read that Scientific American named him the gadfly of invasion biology. You know, like a fly that bothers cows? Or in Chu's case, an outspoken critic of his own field.
It's not on a business card or anything.
Here's Chu's basic argument. It's not accurate to label a species as invasive or an invader. It makes it seem like we're blaming the species, when really we humans introduced it. When we ship cargo on boats or airplanes or just move stuff around the globe, insects get moved too. And then they just try to reproduce and survive, like all species are programmed to do.
You know, life persists.
Chu says this is the reality of today's globalized world.
You can be anywhere on the planet in 48 hours if you want to, and anything that happens to be stuck to the bottom of your shoe or somewhere in your bag is going to come along with you.
He says if you think about it a different way, the most invasive species in North America are our agricultural crops.
Like wheat and corn and soybeans and cotton.
When you drive through the Central Valley, you see row after row of the same crops. Long lines of orange trees or almond trees, originally from Asia and the Middle East, stretching out toward infinity.
But we don't think of them as being the problem because they're doing what we want them to.
Growing fruit that we want to eat and sell and make money off of. And since citrus trees originally came from another country,
the fact that something else comes in and lives in the citrus shouldn't be a big surprise.
Not to mention, these large farms that only grow one crop are especially vulnerable to pests. But this is our reality. We do have monocrops. We want to ship food that's grown in the U.S. to markets around the world, and we want to import food from other countries to eat here. And we want all that trade to happen fast. And there could be real consequences to some of these insects spreading. California could lose our almond or grape industry. So Matthew Chu admits this system is arguably the best we can do, given that reality. Even if inspecting cargo ships seems like needle-in-the-haystack futility, we probably still have to try.
I don't know how much worse the problem would be if we didn't try. I think it would be unhuman of us not to try.
So we try. Border protection officers inspect every ship entering the U.S. At international airports, they ask passengers for any fruit or plants in their bags. And here in California, there's an extra line of defense at our state borders. When you drive into the Golden State, you might get stopped at a highway checkpoint and asked a question by someone like Ryan McKenna.
How you doing, folks? Any plants, produce?
Nothing.
Take care.
It's a question he asks over and over all day.
How you doing, ma'am? Are you carrying any plants or produce?
No.
Okay, have a good day.
The California Department of Food and Agriculture runs 16 different checkpoints on every major highway that enters California, from Arizona, Nevada, and Oregon. McKenna works at this checkpoint just outside of Truckee. Today, the line of cars is relentless. It makes it hard to maintain a conversation with him.
How long do you do this for?
Oh, I've been doing this, it'll be 11 years, middle of this month. Any plants or produce? Have a good day. Or do you mean how long do we do this? We usually try and stay on 20-minute rotation. Any plants or produce?
McKenna sees himself as the first line of defense for agriculture at the California border. He's trying to make sure that people don't bring in anything that insects could be hitching a ride on.
Any animals, pets?
No. They call me an animal sometimes, but, you know.
Have a good day.
All right, thanks.
You get that a lot.
I heard that joke 3 times in 20 minutes of standing here. McKenna looks for different insects depending on the time of year and where the car is coming from. Like when I visit, it's cherry season.
Plants, produce?
Some store-bought cherries, is it?
Store-bought cherries. I do need to look at the cherries real quick.
The guy grabs them out of the cooler in the back of his truck.
Where'd you buy them? What state?
Oh, in Utah.
In Utah, okay. Yeah. Let's do a quick look at them real quick.
Because so much of the nation's fruit is grown here in California, the state is very strict about produce coming in from other parts of the country. The fear is that invasive insects that manage to make their way into places like Florida or New York could spread here.
All right, man. All right. You can hang on to those.
Thank you.
Take care.
McKenna and I go inside the inspection station building, which has a lab that basically looks like a kitchen. His coworker, Leilani Wong, is cutting up some homegrown cherries from Idaho that she just had to confiscate from a family. She's very excited to show me what she found.
Yep, this one's got two.
Two fruit fly larvae. Every cherry in this bag is infested with maggots.
This family that I took it from, as I was after I told them, hey, I gotta take these, they were throwing them in their mouth and eating as much as they could, and oh man, I should have showed it to them.
McKenna and Wong clearly love their jobs. They see themselves as stewards of California's agriculture. So I asked them what they think about the fact that we try to keep out certain kinds of insects just to protect non-native plants like cherries or oranges.
So what you mean is, since we're already growing a non-native species in California, and we're keeping out a non-native species to prevent the infection of a non-native species. Wow, that's a mind bender. I really don't have a good answer for that. I'm sorry. What do you think?
Well, my answer was that was it's what as us as a human being put value on.
Right.
So we love citrus. I mean, we want to protect what we value. So that's why we want to protect ourselves from, protect our sisters from that.
I mean, I think that's probably the best answer. Yeah, way to go, Leilani. You got it.
I got you.
Yeah, you got it, girl.
If you look at the millions of acres of almonds or orange trees in California, it's pretty clear what we value. And as long as that's the priority, California will keep patrolling its borders for insects. I'm Marissa Ortega-Welch for Cross Currents.
When he sees the flame, he might get burned, but he's in the game. And once he's in, he can't go back. He'll beat his wings till he burns them.
Marissa is our science reporter. Reach out to her at science@kalw.org. This is the first story in our ongoing series, Operation Pest Patrol, which will be airing all week. The series was made possible by funding from the 11th Hour Food and Farming Fellowship. You're listening to Cross Currents from KALW News. I'm Ben Trefney, in for Hana Baba. And now, a story from KALW's radio class at Solano State Prison in Vacaville. The incarcerated men there record interviews and edit them into short pieces that we play for you here on KALW.
This is Uncuffed.
Stories from Solano State Prison.
Roy Walker is a diehard Raiders fan. He also loves to sew. In prison, he's woven his two passions together by sewing handmade Raiders gear. He was interviewed by Spoon Jackson, a fellow prisoner.
Sewing is therapeutic for Roy Walker. It gave him new eyes, new visions, and new ears. He started sewing. Whatever bugged him totally left his mind. Sewing came into Walker's life when he was at a crossroads. Sewing was the start of his rehabilitation. He could have gone the way of fast money and sold drugs, but he chose to sew and earn slow money.
Can you introduce yourself and say who you are?
My name is Roy L. Walker.
Sewing, is it a woman's thing or a guy's thing or a genderless thing? How do you feel about it?
To me, it's genderless.
Why you say that?
I mean, because I feel like sewing is universal. Just like, I mean, but I'm not the type of person that thinks a woman's role is in the kitchen or something like that. Because, you know, the way I grew up, my father cooked. So, You know, I don't look at a woman does this and a man does that. You know, I feel like if a woman's capable of doing it, then she's able to do it. She can fix a car. She should be able to fix a car.
I think that's a beautiful way to say it. I think a woman's place is wherever she want to be in the universe.
I started sewing because I didn't have the money to keep paying $3 for a pair of shorts. So I started sewing because of that. But once other people started inquiring about the shorts that I had on and they wanted a pair like the ones I had on, that's when I realized, okay, I could start making money myself off this.
What did you make them out of?
The jeans that they give away in the laundry. Nobody in prison ever showed me how to do anything as far as the sewing aspect.
Yeah,
I did that. I initiated that on my own. But then I started watching PBS, and then I would take certain things that they that I saw on PBS and implement it in my own style. Because a lot of times they worked with the machines, and I don't have a machine. Your fingers get real tired, and then I've poked myself and cut myself so many times. It used to take me all day to do one pair of shorts when I first started sewing. Mm-hmm. Now I could do a pair of shorts in probably an hour. You can walk across the yard and see 10 people wearing clothes that came from you. Yeah. Came from the hard work that you put in. Mm-hmm. And when you got people inquiring about, man, who did that? It's like, oh man, Brett did that. Like, okay, yeah, I like that, man. Tell him I want to get some shorts done too. I want to get a shirt done or a skull cap done or something, you know. And to me, that gave me pride and helped me go along and take care of myself while I was in prison without doing the negative stuff that ended me up in prison.
You got into sewing. Did people start coming to you, paying you for sewing?
Yes. I made a pair of shorts. They look like Raider shorts.
So what if a bunch of people from the streets write and want to see what your Raider gear looks like? What would you tell them? How would you sell it? What was unique about it?
It was unique because it was done by hand and it was done with love.
Love of what?
Of being a real Raider fan.
And what makes a real Raider fan?
No matter whether chips are down, man, we're going to root for our team.
Okay, so when they move to Vegas, you going to be going to Vegas to watch the Raiders?
I might even move to Vegas once I get off parole.
Is that right?
Yes.
Okay. Well, how do you see yourself sewing 5 years from now, 10 years from now?
Teaching it to youngsters on the streets, you know, give them something different to look at. Give them a productive way of making a living.
You'd even consider foster care places in Oakland or wherever, mm-hmm. and you can make a few hats to send to those mm-hmm. kids in foster care and say, this is love coming from a fellow Raider or something. Mm-hmm. You know, the Raiders. You could do something like that.
This is all, this interview right here is all enlightening. It's giving me new ideas and new goals, because I was already planning on doing certain things. But now with that, it's just expanding it and giving me another trade to...
Well, that's what Uncuffed does. We try to encourage people and not discourage them. And
yeah.
We think everybody got a niche in life, even if we had to come to prison to find it.
Yeah, that's what I had to do. I look at this time right here as a blessing in disguise, because I was on a path of destruction.
KALW's radio training program at Solano State Prison is supported by the California Arts Council and the Department of Corrections and Rehabilitation. All content is approved by an information officer. Listen to more at kalw.org/uncuffed. And while you're at it, subscribe to the Cross Currents podcast to listen to episodes where you want and when you want. Get it wherever you listen to podcasts. Today's Cross Currents team includes Janae Darden, Lance Gardner, Priya Mahadevan, Kristen McCandless, Drew Gwynn, Jessica Plachik, Andrew Stelzer, and Eli Wirtschafter. Our engineers are James Rollins, Gabe Graben, and Tardik Foda. Content manager is Shireen Adel. Our managing editor is David Boyer. Our deputy news director is Angela Johnston. Our opening theme music is by the John Santos Quintet. We're listening to Sylvie Simmons from San Francisco. She's been a renowned music journalist since the 1970s, but she's flipping the script and singing her own songs at the Octopus Literary Salon in Oakland tomorrow night. The show starts at 7 p.m. For Cross Currents, I'm Ben Trefney.
God knows how many times I tried. Talking to myself, 'cause you're not listening. I call your name, of course, you don't reply.